Welcome, everybody. It is the first episode of The Crack in 2026. And look, there's a lot of people like, oh, nothing. There's no events happening. Oh, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about a lot of things. A lot of stuff is going down, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, Ilia Topuria, a lot of personal situations going down here. And one of the most hyped fighters in the sport at the moment. Someone that we are all very excited about. And we're starting to wonder, how long could all of this controversial stuff going on in his private life, how long could that see him sidelined? What does that mean for the lightweight division? Speaking of the lightweight division, we've had an update on why Armin Sarukian has not fought for the lightweight title via Dana White. And we also have a simmering beef, and it's got pretty nasty, between Paddy Pimblett and Dan Hooker. We'll talk about that a bit later. And if you saw the boys in the back yesterday, you'll know they were getting pretty excited about the idea that Daniel Cormier and John Jones could finally bury the hatches. But unfortunately, since that episode of Boys in the Back, there has been an update, and it suggests, no, they are still bitter enemies. I'm quite happy about that, but we will get into that too. And we are going to look forward to the biggest stories of 2026, and we have a very special guest to help us to do that today. But before we get into that, as some of you know, the MMA community lost a dear friend and colleague over the Christmas. Abby Subban was a talented videographer and editor. If you are an MMA fan, I'm sure you've seen his work on MMA Junkie. The guy was everywhere. He was producing podcasts, did a lot of work. He was one of my oldest and dearest friends in the industry. He even helped everything with this podcast before it came under the Uncrowned banner. He helped name the show. He was like, you know, you always say, what's the crack? You should call the show The Crack. You'll see there, this is the first logo for The Crack before we came over to Uncrowned, and that was all Abby. He was just pushing me towards doing this, and it's one of the greatest gifts I've ever got, honestly. Right now, Abby's family are in the process of arranging his funeral and putting together different arrangements, and there is a GoFundMe out there to help them out. I know it's January, I know you just put the Christmas to bed, but if you can spare anything at all, it would be greatly appreciated. And now, on with the show. Rest in peace, Abby. And as I said, we do have a special guest today. We have a stalwart of The Crack, of course, as well. With Chuck Mendenhall is here, my beautiful hatted friend. And we also have a man we don't see so often on podcasts anymore, but he has joined us to bail us out because, of course, big time Ben folks couldn't be bothered to be on the first show of the year. But we got an even better host. It is Shaheen Al-Shadi, the editor-in-chief of Uncrowned. Shaheen, welcome back, baby. How are you?
Oh, it's beautiful to be back. Yeah, take that, Ben. Take that. Yeah. It's good to be back. You're catching me in the middle of quite an S storm in my house right now. Anybody with young kids can relate to this, Chuck?
No, I think we dodged that one.
Oh, God, I am so envious of you. The 3-year-old picked it up.
Oh, man.
And then the 3-year-old gave it to the 1.5-year-old. And today, my wife woke up. She has it. I'm the only one still unscathed right now. Like, this is just, it's a terrible situation.
Stay in the quarantine, Sean. Stay in the quarantine there.
Oh, so we're doing it. We're getting by. Good to be back, fellas.
I need to know more about this rotavirus. Because if you're ever going to get rotavirus, I would say straight after Christmas, after the damage I've done to myself via food, I would want rotavirus now. Just to get rid of a few kilos, you know, to get me at the new year so I'm looking spelt on camera.
Is that your general plan? Like, I'll just get sick at some point, and then I'll lose some weight.
I'm thinking about flying to Arizona and licking Shaheen at this point. How does one get this virus?
Don't threaten me with a good time, buddy. Rotavirus, basically, things are coming out one end or they're coming out the other. So if you're looking for a weight loss situation, this is actually probably right up your alley, buddy.
That's our sponsor for the show.
You know, rotavirus.
Rotavirus.
Chuck,
ask
how are
your
you,
doctor Dallas? If rotavirus is right for you.
How are you getting on, Chuck? Has your Christmas brought you anything better than rotavirus?
Yeah, you know, it was okay. We come out unscathed. I will say that, like, this has been a little, it feels like this has been a while since we've put one of these on, and I guess it's just my light, but it could be that I feel like I'm glowing or I'm just very pale, and that's in part because Connecticut is very gray and cold right now, and I look like a cavefish because of that. You know?
Cavefish.
You know, very.
Heard of a cavefish before.
The cavefish, Chuck Mendenhall.
That's right.
A new nickname, perhaps.
But it might just be my light. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, as we know, it's been Award Central over on the .com element, of course, and on the Ariel Helwani show all week. But, lads, we do have some news to get into here, because I don't know if you saw, I know we sent this out via the notes for today's show, but Ilya Topuria, in a very, very well-publicized civil court situation or custody situation for his daughter and her ability to leave Spain, absolutely mobbed by reporters outside a courthouse. We do have an update on that situation via Marca. I'll read from this very quickly. It has only come out in the last couple of hours. Away from the octagon due to a delicate personal matter, writes Marca, Ilya Topuria has seen the court rule in his favor within the context of his complicated separation from his now ex-wife, Georgina, I cannot pronounce her second name. As Marca can confirm, the two-time UFC champion left the hearing he attended on January 7th at the Court for Violence Against Women, where all of his ex-wife's requests were dismissed. The hearing was related to a family and an administrative matter linked to a trip outside of Spain taken by the daughter of El Matador. For now, his ex-wife will not be able to take their 1.5-year-old daughter out of the country until a divorce decree and a visitation schedule for Topuria are established. This was the judge's ruling. The fighter, who has been unable to see his daughter for 4 months despite numerous attempts, left the court hearing relieved to see that the court order states it was the mother's unilateral decision to prevent the father, Ilya Topuria, from seeing his daughter. His ex-partner justified leaving Spain by citing the harassment she was being subjected to on social media, but the magistrate denied this, pointing out that those exit tickets had been purchased 12 days before Ilya Topuria issued the statement that triggered the entire media frenzy. And just before we get into it, lads, we should note that the post that Ilya Topuria put out is probably the reason that we are a bit concerned as to what we see in his future, because he does cite a difficult decision to temporarily step away from defending his title. He says it wasn't a decision he took lightly, but he does cite like false allegations of domestic abuse unless financial demands were met. This is according to a post he put out on Instagram 3 weeks ago. Very heavy stuff for Ilya Topuria, and a guy we were really, really excited about and still are really, really excited about. Shaheen, first of all, please, how worried are you in terms of this taking away from Topuria's career? Because obviously this has to be a priority for him right now.
Well, first, let me see. My favorite part of Pizzi is always just when Pizzi gets to read like legalese.
Like, which is every Friday, by the way, Sha.
Yeah, it seems like that's just kind of what the Friday shows are now. Pizzi gets to read some complex text. Yeah. So you asked me how worried am I for Ilya Topuria. I mean, obviously, this is not an ideal situation for anyone involved. I will admit, like, I may be a bad person to ask about this, because to me, the especially with like things like we're seeing today of like, here's an update on X court nuance of, you know, whatever is going on. It feels gross in a way to sort of be following it like this. Like, these are these two people's personal matters. There's a kid involved. Like, that, it just, it feels like we're peering into a window and it's voyeuristic in a way that, like, I don't really feel comfortable, if I'm being honest. So, like, we don't know. We don't know Ilya Topuria personally. We don't know his wife personally. We don't know, you know, their daughter. Like, we don't know the intricacy of the situation. We only know what's being presented to us. So for me to, like, make any sort of judgment on it, I can't really do that. I just hope that, you know, for the sake of the child, if nothing else, that, like, this can get figured out relatively smoothly. It seems like the Spanish press, like, we saw the scenes of Ilya outside of the courthouse and getting mobbed. Seems like the Spanish press is really giving the full court press on this in a way that, again, it's like, I don't know, man, this is divorce proceedings, right? Like, this isn't, killed anybody. Nobody, like, there's not any, you know, assault or anything like this. So, like, I don't know. It feels uncomfortable to me and, again, voyeuristic, but I do hope that for the sake of Ilya, for the sake of the lightweight division, for the sake of the sport, I mean, Ilya is probably the biggest star in the sport right now coming into 2026, right? So we're just not going to get him until late in the year. Like, that's going to be a big bummer of a year. So I think for his sake and for the sake of the division, I hope, you know, that this works out smoothly, but I do feel like it's going to continue to get a little gross, just like in the following of the coverage of it. Because again, you're going to see people cheerleading like every quote unquote victory for Ilya, or, you know, it's things like that. And it's like, man, we don't know what's actually going on here.
Like, and he's had such a proud, like, kind of rise to his fame, right? Like, he's been a guy who, you know, he'll out-masculine you. He'll do all this stuff. Like, he's gonna go up. He's gonna call a shot. He's gonna do these things. He shows up into a fight game where that kind of machismo and bravado is just everywhere. And he just transcends it, right? You know, for him to even come public, to release that statement, to try to get out in front of the storm and all this stuff, you know, had to have been very difficult on him. To step away, you know, for and let guys fight for basically the belt that you, and I know it's not, he hasn't lost his belt or anything like that, but to watch two guys contest over a lightweight belt while you sit on silence, got to kill him. And then to be dealing with the situation, which like Sean was saying, like it's very difficult to really know the truth. And I guess that's why you go through this. But the fact that it's going to play out in public is very strange. And also, if anything, his absence is only magnified by seeing stuff like what you just saw. Him walking, you know, out of the courtroom or into the courtroom there with all those, all that press. He has achieved that kind of tabloid fame, which is just incredible. Like for people in North America, and I think that he's a big enough star in North America, but when you really look at it globally and just what he means to the UFC beyond it and just his transcendent quality every time he comes into orbit, like where he's got a fight week coming up and all that, he is the biggest star. And I think that it's something that's very... we don't normally see, like we've had all the Conor McGregor stuff where you know, things keep happening. It's on the back end of his career. It's when he's not really competing for the most part. You get a guy like this who I think is at the very peak of where he's at and you still feel like he could still ascend even higher than where he's at. You don't want to see like it get derailed over something like this in a personal sense. And who knows how this will all shake out. But the way it's played out to this point, it should be a little alarming. You know, it should be a little alarming that there is a real threat there that maybe you don't see him anytime soon in the octagon.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's crazy because everything's happened so quick with Ilya, including this situation that we've arrived at here. Of course, it has nothing to do with his sporting career, but this whole meteoric rise he's gone on, it's very akin to McGregor, right, in terms of him calling his shot, moving up in weight class, chasing down the biggest fights that are out there. And it does feel like what we've seen with Hotbeds, which we've covered on Uncrowned, of course, as well. The Hotbed in France, I feel like we're just knocking on the door of that happening in Spain. And then we have this situation happening. And I agree with Shaheen, what he's saying. It does feel gross and it's very difficult to talk about because we don't actually know what is going on here. We have bits, we have parsing through different pieces of information that are coming out. But you can see from that press corps that are outside, I don't think I've ever seen a mixed martial arts fighter in that kind of situation where it looks like there are 20 microphones around him trying to get a quick quote as he goes in to essentially like something about a child, whether they can leave a country. That is an insane amount of coverage to get. It just feels like a speed bump at this point for Topuria is sad because of how quickly his career ascent was going. And you also have this lightweight title situation where we have Armin Sarukian. Everybody wants to see this kind of fight. We will be talking about Armin and his headbutt on Dan Hooker a little bit later on. We have Paddy and Gaethje about to fight. It's just a crazy situation in that regard. It's also the conversations that are happening, and this is probably part of the gross element that Shaheen talked about earlier. When Chael Sonnen appeared on Ariel's show last month and he was speaking about it, he did make the point that historically, fighters stepping away from the fight game, it's usually, like, you know, with a title and making an interim title, everything like that, it's usually due to an injury or something like that. In this situation, it is an incredibly personal issue. It is a family issue. And again, I may be part of the gross element myself bringing this up, but Chuck, do you think there comes a point where the UFC kind of tell Ilya to shit or get it off the pot, for lack of a better term?
I mean, and again, you can't underemphasize what he means to the UFC right now. I mean, they're entering into a new, you know, partnership with Paramount Plus, and you've got your biggest star.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to want to do that. If they can keep him as the vital piece in that division, the dangling carrot for whatever's playing out, and like he's out there and that's going to be the guy that they're heading towards, I think you got to do that. But you know, there is something about that, you know, and you look at the kind of history of guys who've been stripped of their titles. And generally speaking, I think that is correct what Chael said, because if you look back, I mean, it's either like, you know, like Barnett and Shirk, and those guys back in the day were like steroids or they had some kind of legal drugs. You look at BJ Penn, it's because he signed with K1 back in the day. Remember that? Like, but these are like ancient like way back in the day, but I think John Jones has been stripped three times and has vacated twice. So he's like the master at this kind of thing. But the closest you really come to this situation is maybe what just happened, and where, you know, John Jones is basically like, it's not personal issues, but I'm just enjoying my life and protecting my legacy. And I'm just going to be hanging out until I'm forced to do otherwise. That's probably the closest we've come to a situation. There aren't too many that are dealing with lots of people deal with personal issues, but we don't know about it. You only find out about it afterwards, right? Like you find out though, like, hey, I was going through some really crazy shit back then. And and you find out about it afterwards. It's rare that you find out about something as it's happening, and then it becomes a media circus as it's happening. And that'll be new terrain, you know? And so I guess it really depends on how long this whole thing drags out, and when does, you know, Ilya himself feel like he's in the mind space to even give the full go back to fighting, right? So a lot to be seen, and we'd just be speculating otherwise.
Yeah, that's unfortunately a big part of it here until more information comes out. It's a difficult thing to speak about. I wanted to give you guys
Let me just say real quickly. It does feel like, because you're asking, like, should he be stripped of the interim title? It does feel like there's an exception to the rule almost, right? Like, the length of time that you get before you are, quote unquote, stripped of the title, it is different for some people rather than others. Like, if this was Armand Tsarukyan who held the title, man would have.
Oh, he'd already be gone.
Oh, that'd be gone by now, you know? Like, even if, like, this is Justin Gaethje, like, that thing's going in like a month or two, right? But, like, historically, you look at, like, just what Chuck said, John Jones, man held the title for a very long time without doing anything with it. Even going back further, Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Tony Ferguson doesn't have an undisputed title because Conor McGregor just sat there holding the lightweight title for like a year and a half, not actually doing anything with it.
I would have known you would get Tony Ferguson's title right now. I'm just saying,
you just had the year of Tony Ferguson. Man should be, you know, I'm just saying. But no, but for real, like that, how long did that situation last in 2016 range, 17 range, where it just stretched on seemingly forever and there was no rush to take the title off of somebody like that, right? Because Ilya Topuria, again, he is the guy in the sport right now. If you're the UFC, he is more valuable to you with a belt than without a belt. If you strip him, then you got to go through the whole process we just did in June of having him fight someone, you know. Just I don't anticipate I anticipate them giving him a very, very long leash in that sense.
Well, you spoke about Armand Tsarukyan in there. We all have mentioned him. And we finally got clarity, guys. Everyone's been wondering, why is an Armand fighting for the title? And of course, he has given them a few reasons over the last few years. But we finally got to the bottom of this with Robbie Fox speaking to Dana White on Barstool Sports. I believe, do we have a video of this on air, Jordan?
One of these fans, but some fans thought Armand should have been the one to get a 155 title pound shot.
We knew that would happen too.
Of course. Did the headbutt play any factor in the decision to not go with him? It did, right?
A lot of things have factored in, you know. Yes.
Done. I'm done talking, he says.
Chuck, tell us, what is your reaction to this this breaking news from Dana White and Robbie Fox?
First of all, when Robbie says that not him, but other journalists, I think I was one of those guys that he's talking about, you know. But We speculated, right? Like when we watched that weigh-in and that headbutt happened, we were kind of going through this like, dude, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? Because we already knew, you know, that he was basically in the doghouse, you know, for the way we kicked off last year. You know, it was like, you know, he drops out of that fight, his title fight, and even though they're billing this as like a number one contender fight or that he's going to get a title shot, that factored in. I remember we had this whole discussion because we're like, does this give you pause now? Can you trust this guy? Is the UFC just going to be like, you know, we like Armand after he does something that jeopardizes a fight, even though it ended up not really jeopardizing anything? It was all in play, and I'm not surprised even a little bit, because the guys that the UFC kind of at some point circles and says, this is a problem child, they're not eager to give them title shots. I mean, I don't think that they wanted to give Merab a title shot. They did not like Merab for the longest time. They grew to like him later because he was like, oh, I'll just fight every weekend if you want me, you know, and like he's fighting all these title shots or all these title bouts, but he wasn't a guy that they were going to expedite. And I feel like that's where Armand is. And even though it was unspoken up until now, because Robbie is always able to kind of get Dana to open up and tell us these things, you know what I mean? But like, I think that's what I suspected, right? Didn't you think that? I mean, I kind of was like, I'm sure this factors in.
Are you surprised to hear this, Shaheen? And why are you one of those journalists, by the way?
He is one of those. Come on.
Who can say? Who can say? I mean, am I surprised by this? This is just Robbie. I like Robbie as a person. Robbie could have said anything right there, and Dana would just be like, yeah, that's the part.
Yeah. That's right.
Like, Dana, all these food videos that Ariel really likes about with Armin, does that play a part in not giving Armin the shot? I'd be like, yeah.
100%.
If Ariel likes him, you know, we can't. Like, he's just going to say yes to anything. That's ridiculous. Like, no. When they're sitting there making this decision of like, hey, we're going to surpass the guy who we just proclaimed as number one contender and has been number one contender for like a year and a half. He headbutted that guy on stage and nothing happened. Like, that didn't go through their mind. That wasn't a part of any part of this conversation. It was, hey, Justin Gaethje is like real fun and people really like Justin Gaethje.
Yeah.
Hey, people really like Patty Pimblett. That's a bigger fight. Let's do that. Like, that was the extent of it. I'm just going to tell you right now. Like, there was no... Dana would have said yes to anything. This is so silly.
You know, it's funny you bring up that because I was speaking to this with one of our colleagues today, this interview, and I went through it and I watched it. I kind of was hoping for a reinvigoration of Dana White with this Paramount coming up, you know?
Were you?
Really?
I guess what? Yeah,
I want to see what you're imagining. I want to.
You know, he just didn't seem to be too excited about the goings on of the UFC at the moment. You know, I was like, maybe you come out here and you're like, this is huge. You know, thought we'd get a bit of reigning defending Dana from back in the day. You know,
yeah.
didn't get a sniff of that, boys. I was going, Jesus Christ. I mean, exactly as Shaheen said, it's just kind of like, yeah, cool, yeah. What'd you say?
He's under no pressure to expand on what he said. You know, it's just like, that's what it is. It is what it is.
I think he did say that on several points throughout the interview. It is what it is. And it's just like, Jesus, you know, it's hard sledding out there at the moment to be buzzing for the UFC. And like, he is the guy that we're meant to be conducting our enthusiasm through nearly or something to that
it's
effect.
Kind of funny though, man. Back in the day, you remember how up in arms people would get like, if there was a shrug off like this, can you imagine like, because if so many people were like, if Armin was in the spot like in 2015 or something like that, people would be losing their minds. There'd be columns. There'd be, you know, people would be all over the place talking about this because it would undermine the structure that they've put in place for the title, right? But now it's just kind of like we get to like a decade later and these types of things are just par for the course. You know, we just kind of move on and.
Dude, I mean, can you imagine like the Dana White scrum now? Like an old school.
Oh, God.
Circa like UFC 160 Dana White scrum where like, people don't even know that exists at this point.
That's
like
true.
We're the old guys at this point talking about that. But like we're 30 people just swarming and throwing questions at him and like kind of sparring with him in a way that just doesn't frankly exist.
Yeah, it was almost like a come here. We're barely on record. Come on, guys. We're barely on record. Let's talk about what's on your minds. Like those days are long, long gone.
Him telling Luke, like, Nate Diaz is bigger than you, buddy. I was like,
oh
no,
my God,
man.
I
what
forgot about that.
About?
Is that when he impersonated
like,
that Cyborg,
type
too?
That stuff
like,
does not happen.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Like, but they were not ever scheduled, though. But as a member of the media corps, you'd be waiting for it, right? You'd
oh,
do
God.
The press conference and you'd be like...
Nobody cared about the first part. You're just waiting like, for the scrum.
And you'd see Ariel coming around with Casey trying to get the angle, right? Like, we'd always be in the front, the guys right with the dictaphones, and you'd see Ariel just coming around the back trying to get the angle for the one-on-one.
Yeah, he would make himself very narrow. I remember that.
Yeah. Like a blade putting through. But unfortunately, like... And I like Robbie as well. I get on with him great. I go out of my way great. To speak to him at every event. He's a really talented dude. But these are the kind of interviews that Dana wants to do now, right? Like, it's just like, it's not me, but what do you think of this kind of thing? And I don't know, man. It's just, I guess that's just the way it is. Like, these are the only things he's open to. We saw it, right, Shaheen, during the boxing when he went into the Crawford v. Canelo. He suddenly was getting hit with questions that he didn't like. And you could almost, the shock was there and almost... It was a shock to watch a press conference where questions like that were being asked of him. And he's nearly looking around like, hang on, what? This is what we do here, buddy. You know, where's
security,
the dude in the pink jacket?
Security, get that son of a bitch out of here right now. That's basically what he wanted to do.
Like, what does that say to you about the state? I know we've talked about this before, but in terms of like, how much lower is the standard of media here in MMA at the moment? Because we've been trained to be like this for the most part, right? We've been told like this is what you have to do to be successful in this realm, essentially. Now,
Well, I think there's a point of like, I think there's two things that we're talking about, right? Because there's a difference between like what we do as a team at Uncrowned and like what, you know, maybe the traveling media do, that sort of thing, right? Like, cause I think being part of the traveling media at that point, like I'm not interested in that. It doesn't feel like, you know, I don't feel like Chuck and Pete, I don't feel like any of you guys are interested in that either. Cause there's not a lot of, like, there's nothing really that comes from being part of that group at this point, unless you're like specifically seeking out that type of thing of like filming the interviews and press conferences, et cetera, et cetera. For me, that's not interesting anymore. The UFC is really like homogenized fight week in a way that's just really boring in a lot of ways. And I we can all feel it. Like, I think the fan base that's been around long enough can feel it as well. Whereas I feel like, you know, there, again, the state of journalism is kind of like a bigger, broader question where if we wanted to talk about that for like an hour, we could do that. But I think there's something to be said for that, that what Robbie's doing is a very, very different lane than I think what we do it over here at Uncrowned, where we can be very critical. We don't worry about any sort of access or anything like that. We do more deep dive type of stuff. Like, I don't know. I think, again, it's the state of journalism sort of like debate is one that's worth having, but it is a little bit more nuanced than just like, hey, looking at this interview and like, hey, this is what it is now.
Yeah.
In that sense, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And there's no pressure to be critical if you're not really playing a role of a journalist. In those situations, I almost feel like the guys...
It's like an entertainer role.
Yeah, they're an entertainer. They're kind of a podcast. Hey, we're going to have our buddy Dana White on and we're going to talk to him. They're not trying to dig up, you know, some controversy. You hope that you get some out of it because that's where, you know, maybe he says something unprompted or you lead him somewhere, you know, and those are always going to be fine. But the premise is not to be scrutinizing stuff like that. It's more to be like if you had a special guest on your show and you're just trying to shoot the shit with him, right? Like that's more the way that those are arranged these days.
Yeah.
But also I think too, like if Robbie pushes back on that, it's like, oh really? You know, like can you elaborate? James just saying no. Like at this point they're made men. All of these people have succeeded.
Yeah.
They've won. Right? Like UFC's won, TKO's won. You could even stretch it out. WWE's won, Zuffa Boxing without even starting it or announcing a card for its first ever.
That card looks good, by the way.
Yeah, right. On the 23rd, comes off of boxing. X versus Y is going to fight.
Fight Capital World, guys.
I feel like I'm. Can I say that I'm going to go out there, Sean? Or is that like I'm going to go check this
out?
Well,
you just did. So yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go out there, and the thing is,
there it is. Fight Capital World.
It feels like those old grab bags. Like here's a $5 grab bag. Let's see what like you might get something that's really valuable in it, or you might just get some junk. Like this is what it feels like heading into this thing.
Yeah, there's no need to try. If that makes sense for Dana White in any of these situations at this point, like whatever he's going to say is what he's going to say. And there's, you're not going to get anything from him in a real sense in a setting like that.
So the Dana White media scrum is a casualty of the UFC's outrageous success is what we're basically saying here. They are so successful. They don't need to answer your bullshit questions, guys. All right. They don't need to do that shit. Go and fuck yourselves. We are the UFC, the most powerful entity in all of combat sports, and we are here worshiping at their altar.
You just made the new hit list that's going to come out in a few weeks there, PT.
We didn't get the hit list. I got no black and white images for the last few years, and it really made me as a journalist. You know, people are like, well, that PT Carroll guy, he's dangerous. Yeah. Watch out. I'm missing my fastball. We need to talk about the lightweight division here because, man, shit has got really messed up here between Paddy Pimblett and Dan Hooker, you know? And it's horrible shit they said about each other here, honestly. We don't have the video of this. Again, Paddy Pimblett said this, not me. Let's bring up the image here. Here is a tweet. I'm going to say this once again. This is what Paddy Pimblett said on a podcast with the MMA guru. He said, Dan Hooker couldn't grapple a rapist off his mom, mother. Sorry, I can't see that. And yeah, that's a direct.
I mean,
there.
That's below the standard of good taste. I will say that.
That is
well below.
it's rough.
It's crazy that this is what, like, is this a line that pops into your head? You know, like I was watching that and I was like, no, or is this just something he's heard or like he's been holding on to?
Idiom.
But I'm like, man, when you go into those, that type of thing, it's so like, even in the fight game, you know, where it's just like guys a lot of times will go below the belt. It's just, it always hits so different where you're like, man, why are you going there? What are we doing here?
It's nearly like a 6 points deep conversation you'd have with your mate, you know, when they're like no one's around and he says something crazy. Right. Like, what exactly. The fuck did you just, what the fuck did you just, you know what
but
I mean?
Again, this is after you've like, okay, now I've lost all perspective on what's decent, you know, and like you might say some shit like that, but like, that's like, just to roll it out there so casually, man. I was like, it was, that's jarring. I'll give him that. Like, that's a very jarring thing to say.
It's, do you know what's shocking to me about it, lads? Paddy's kind of getting into that mainstream space in the UK, and the sponsors like he's got are really blue chip, like Under Armour deals, things like that. Like the press thing, the press kind of interest in him is kind of broadening out to more casual mainstream sports interest. And then you say something like that, and you're just kind of like, just from your own brand point of view, you know, like what were you thinking there, mate? Like that you can't joke about this kind of stuff. But it's kind of common, again, in MMA, right? Like, you kind of want to see these guys. We had John Jones with Nike, right, Shaheen? All this kind of stuff. And then you're just like, oh, there it is again. Are you surprised by this?
I'm not surprised by anything at this point, man. What are we talking about? Last year, we literally had a ranked contender talking about Hitler was a good guy.
I forgot all about that. That's right.
It's one, and that speaks to the broader point, right? It's like, if that happens in 2016, you're not forgetting about it by 2017. I think just the bar in general, whether it's the sport, the world right now, like I think the bar for what is shocking and outraging is just been lowered to such a wild degree that like it's not even recognizable to what it once was. And I don't know. I hear things like this and like you have the initial like, ooh, that's a little crazy. Yeah. And then you just move on from it. I think it's just, it's through osmosis of living in sort of this era that we're living in, like it's just so hard to work up outrage, sustainable outrage at this point.
It did help like bring Dan Hooker into a darker space in his in his response. I mean,
yeah, we do have that here as well. Obviously, for those of you who don't know, Paddy Pimblett dedicated a fight in 2022 to a friend of his, Ricky, who he lost to suicide. And Dan wrote back to the message that Paddy put up, saying, you know, oh, you're a good mate, Paddy, R.I.P. Ricky, which is the name of his friend. You can see here, Paddy replying here, thought we couldn't be mates because I'm ranked above you. You took a hypothetical joke about how bad your grappling is and responded by talking shit about my mate who committed suicide. Now that's the lowest of the low, and onside is fine by me. You're utter dog shit at fighting. You know, I don't think it's one of these cases where like what you know, one is not better than the other. Like, this is two horrific things people have said here. You know, I don't think anyone's looking at this from like, oh, well, in fairness, this guy only said this, you know? It is just, it's just a horrific exchange, right? Like, this is just a horrible, horrible exchange between people. But the issue with it is, for me, lads, more people are going to want to see these fight because of it. Like, this is the industry we're in now. They have both said these deplorable things about each other. One, a friend who he lost due to suicide. Another, like, something about the guy's mother in a horrific situation. And people are going to be like, let's get these two guys in a cage ASAP. Why does Paddy have to fight Gaethje? Let's get Dan Hooker in there instead. Right, Chuck?
Probably. Again, now, this kind of goes back to, does our attention span stay there? And then really it comes down to, are they going to keep bickering? Because I feel like if they're going to keep, you know, sniping at each other and make it personal, but they're going to drag that out, then yes, I do think that that could be the case. And honestly, it's not, regardless of how you feel about what they're talking about, the content matter and how where they're hitting below the belt and what's a decent and what's not, like Hooker staying in the conversation is not a bad thing. I mean, Paddy was one of those guys, I think, who was had the kind of audacity that put him, you know, kind of expedited him a little bit in the UFC's eyes, probably putting him in a better situation. And here he is. So I'm like, it's not a bad thing to stay close to a guy who could potentially be champion to kick off our year here and kick off a new era. So I'm not saying that I condone like what the content is, but like if Hooker can kind of keep in his space, I don't think that's a bad thing.
It is funny that like, I think at this point, like in sort of the way, again, the world works and the way our brains work within the fight game, especially like those of us who've been in this for as long as we have at this point, like I think that this exchange will be forgotten by next week.
Yeah.
But the thing that will make us remember it is if there is some sort of physical hotel style confrontation, right? Because we still talk about like Ilya and Paddy with the hand lotion or whatever that was, the hand sanitizer, like those are the things that stick in our brain. is like Muhammad Makayev and Manil Kopp in the middle of the hotel. Like, true. Once it gets physical, then it's like, oh, okay, just elevate it a little bit. Now I'm kind of into this. But when it's just this stuff, it's hard to work up any sort of outrage for me.
Hooker, of course, is fighting BSD the week after Paddy fights Gaethje.
It's a tough fight, man.
It's a good fight.
It's a great fight, but I feel like two positive results for the two boys that we have in this situation with Ilya on ice and Armin, obviously, the headbutt has just ruled him out of ever fighting for the title.
He's a few fights away right now. You know what I mean?
He's in the Mendenhall moment, as we call it. A few fights away, permanently, in perpetual.
There's always an eight ball right in front of him. He's not.
That is a fucking great fight, though.
It is such a good, like you said it, and it tickled it got my brain working. And that speaks to how, like, we've always said lightweight division is the best division in the whole freaking sport. People would say bantamweight, they're wrong. Like, it's lightweight. A fight like this is like a perfect emblematic representation of why it sucks to have a sort of logjam champion situation at the top to start the year, like we are with Ilya, because like Dan Hooker and BSD are what? Like lower top 10, periphery top 10 guys right now, like top 8, top 7. But yet both of those men are like the type of just dogs, like all out dogs that, you know, they would actually like let themselves die in the octagon to win this fight. And just like the idea of them two sort of pitting wills against each other is just so, like, it's electric. And that fight is almost not even remotely meaningful in the scape of like this division.
But
right,
let's frame it like this. If Hooker goes in there, like, the following week, right? Like, they're a week apart. Like, he goes in there, he wins. Paddy wins. Like, where's Armin in this scenario?
I was thinking that. That's what I'm thinking. I would not
like, does he get just pushed back? Like, I mean, honestly, let's just say, like, you know, that those two guys are ready to go. We don't know what's happening with, you know, with the champion. Like, what do they do? Would they just brush him aside?
He's out there in Russia eating like a giant cheese pizza that's like three times Pizzi's head, you know? Like, he doesn't seem very bothered by a lot of this. If we're being honest,
probably he's got his dog Dollar and his like golden gates and all that stuff.
but it's like what Al Shadi said at the very start. Like, why do we keep expecting something different here? Like, if they have a fight that people suddenly want to see, because these two lads have been talking crazy shit to each other. They don't give a shit that Armin is the best fighter.
It's an interesting time, though, because you're almost like there would have been some standard trying to interject in all the previous years. But you get into this new era and the way they booked this first card, and you're like, hey, the new era might mean that Armin Tsarukyan is just screwed perpetually. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the new era might just be like, it doesn't include you, man. You know what I mean? It's just like one of those type of things. Who are we to say, like, if they are they going to actually look at guys' credentials that they don't want in title fights? I saw people pointing this out before too. Like, some of the guys who are the Dagestani, wrestlers and guys with the OVs as the names and stuff like that. Yeah. There's so many of them. They're so good. At some point, if you had nothing but those as champions, can you imagine what the sport would look like? It would be a lot different, wouldn't it? So it's like, I think there's maybe a little reluctance. You know what I mean? To let too many through.
Yeah, but like, so. No, I agree with you. But like, it's nearly like every division has a situation like this now.
Yeah.
You know, where there's an obvious guy, and they're just like, I don't really like it. Like, featherweight, that title's up for grabs, and it's the same night BSD and Hooker fight. You have Lerone Murphy there in the same situation. You have Evloev
there. That's even
more
egregious. That's even more egregious than the situation, I think.
It is very quite like funny and ironic, though, because you would think in this era where, like, hey, we're getting paid $7 billion to just do this. We won. It doesn't matter. Pay-per-views don't exist. I don't even need to care about pay-per-view sales. You think, like, if there is one set of circumstances where it's like, okay, now the meritocracy, kind of just let's do that because that's all we can, have to do. We don't have to sell these fights. Now we can make this, like, boring matchup that nobody wants, quote-unquote. Yeah. That would seem like now, and instead it's kind of, we're getting further and
that
further.
That is a great point. It's runs contrary to where they should be, probably, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I'm not full of confidence. Like, you know, I am not like, oh yeah, this is the way this is going to go. Everyone get excited. Armin's finally going to get his shot. The fight is Armin v. Ilya, though, let's be honest.
I mean, the fact that Diego Lopez
got a Dan Hooker, really.
But the fact that Diego Lopez is getting this shot, you know, the second shot of Volkanovski, when Volkanovski's like, man, didn't I just beat this guy? And you got like two ready-made contenders, one of them who beat Diego Lopez. I'm like, that's when rhyme and reason goes out the window. You know, it's like, it doesn't make any sense.
That one is particularly egregious because, like, I can understand the Mozart thing. I don't agree with it. I think Mozart should obviously be fighting for his title. But, like, I can understand. Lightly.
That's my guy.
I know. That's my guy. But, like, I can understand, like, hey, we're not jumping through hoops to give this guy a title shot. The other side of that is Lerone Murphy, who just won our knockout of the year for last year. Who, like, hey, man, maybe he wasn't lighting the world on fire with highlight before that, but, like, you put him against Aaron Pico, who's a real MF-er, and he does that, and you come away with, like, again, the knockout of the year. And then he has such an easy backstory. He gets such a story you can tell that, like, maybe these new fans at Paramount who are coming to Paramount are not going to know about, like, hey, this dude got shot in the face, spit out the bullets, and drove himself to the freaking hospital, man. Like, that's a crazy, like, that's a one sentence of a backstory, and you're instantly in if you've never heard it. So, like, that's the most egregious version of this to me. It's like, I can't believe that's the guy.
But Diego's got, like, the dimples and stuff, and they show him on, like,
cool haircut. Swayze.
Yeah, the cool haircut. Yeah. So, I mean, you gotta weigh it all.
Sometimes he wears a fun hat.
Yeah.
That is, look, and that goes a long way. I will
can't
say
be understated. Funny you say that, Al-Shadi. My big memory of, like, the first time covering Lerone was us in Abu Dhabi, and we're standing in the line to go into the press area, and you're working for The Athletic at the time, and you kind of have a few features to write, and you're going through with me, like, I need to do this guy and do this guy, and he's like, yeah, and I've got one, like, I can just do whatever I want. And I was like, he's like, what do you think I should do? And I was like, oh, I don't know, you hear about this Lerone guy? And you're like, no, what's up with him? And I was like, oh, he got shot in the face. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm 100% doing that. It's like, immediately. I had just watched an interview before I left the house of him with Fight Disciples, Adam Catterall and Nick Pete, where he's just standing there and they're like, did you get shot in the face? And he's like, oh shit. And I was like, told Al-Shadi, I think it was to go out around the media row, and suddenly you go in and there's a line of like 10 people in front of Lerone, and it's just constantly, shot in the face, please. We're going for that one. But like,
it was,
do you remember when
it ended up being a good story? It was a good show.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you wrote it, so I'm sure it was. But isn't that a thing though, that we used to really invest in the lore of these fighters? We used to, part of the fandom was pursuing this shit. Like, you know, it's not like you were watching all these guys and you just inherently knew the stories about them. Like, part of the fandom was chasing down these stories and understanding them on that level. I don't think there's that layer to it anymore. I think unless you're force feeding these guys the stories, the fan base in general, because it's become such a massive sport to compare to what it was, they just don't really go down that discovery lane. They have so many fights every week. It's a different thing. It's forced down your throat.
Also, I mean, the fighters themselves ladle out their stories through social media and stuff. Like, it used to be that you would kind of act as the storyteller between, you know, them and the public. And that was, you know, in the days of magazine feature writing and things like that, this was the whole point, right? You're going to fill in to the public who doesn't know about this guy all the details that they need to know. You're going to show them the nuance and the depths of this guy or woman. But that really has changed through social media and, you know, just people coughing up their own charms over the course of time, or controlling their own narratives, essentially, in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
I think there's certainly an element of that, but just like I find conversations like this fascinating because, like, again, it's the evolution of the space and like how a lot of this is consumed, which is sort of our business. It feels like Fight Week, the idea of Fight Week, used to very much be a thing, right? Like, Tuesday or Wednesday, you start to feel it. Media, all the media day, all the different interviews, it would be a whole, like, you'd get a whole just barrage of content. Like, all of it was different, all of it was interesting. Thursday, the press conference, there'd be like little bits and nibbles up to it. Friday, you'd get the final stare downs, and like the whole week you're sort of being like slowly spoon fed more and more, and there was interest in it. There was like genuine, like, it felt like the fan base followed the ebbs and the flows of the week, and there was a conversation and a dialogue throughout the whole week of like, oh, on Wednesday, this guy looked like this, but on Thursday, he seemed a little more focused. Like, what do you think about that? And it was just like, there was very much like a 24/7 press on the whole week. And by the time we built to Saturday, it felt like an actual culmination of like, oh my God, this whole week's been so electric. I can't wait to see like what's going to happen tonight. I don't feel like that exists anymore, man. Like, it's just people getting put through the paces. You get 10 minutes on Wednesday with whatever. Press conferences are never really like that interesting anymore, to a certain degree, and then like you get the weigh-ins and that's it. And I feel like there's just not that story being told, like, just broader throughout the sport, not even just like through us, but just like through the sport throughout the week, that people are following. Like, people tune in on Saturday. People, oh, it's UFC pay-per-view week, okay, I'll check out, you know, XYZ on Saturday afternoon. That's how it feels like it's consumed to me. I don't know if you guys feel
so. No, you're right. And I'm not saying this now. The Brown knows you two lads because he's here. But you guys, the long form features you used to do on Fight Week, I would have specific times to read them. You know, like it was part of my Fight Week. On Saturday morning, I'd get up because obviously the fights are on much later here. They're not starting until 11 p.m. And I'd read them then. So you'd be living off the lifeblood of this feature that you've just read for the day, just going around like, oh, I can't wait to do this. You'd also, because I was writing myself, you didn't want to read your stuff and then just like start trying to force it into whatever I was trying to do. So you'd read them on the day and you'd just be buzzing for it. And I don't know if that exists in the same way. I think Unground, of course, I think we're doing a super job in terms of keeping the long form alive. But you're right in terms of...
But it's mostly like the voice, like keeping a voice alive of just what we're talking about, you know. There should be a certain amount of enthusiasm, skepticism, all of that stuff, right? There should be all of that, but that's what I feel like we do. We're probably the only place kind of dedicated to keeping that rolling, you know what I mean? Where there's just a voice in the sport, kind of given... You know what I mean? Kind of given the goods in that sense. I don't really feel like everybody else is doing. Like you mentioned, most people are just kind of doing more of the, take the quote, plug it into a headline, and, it's kind of a form article at this point.
I think there's probably an element to that of like, hey, there's just the media space has changed so vastly in the whole world, like not even just in sports, but in the world of how like stories are told. That's certainly like a part of it, I think. But also like I wonder if it's so, like, there are so many events at this point, and there were always a lot of events. Even back in 2015, 16, mm-hmm. there was a lot of events. But it just feels like it's been so diluted and so just like every week there's like 5-10 people on a card you've never heard of type of thing. It just like, I don't know if it's the current mindset of sports consumption, the fan base, this particular fan base or whatever, it just doesn't even feel like there's a desire or an interest to like learn about these guys until, you know, they're even like a Michael Morales, right? Like,
right.
Dude is like here, like he's arrived. He is a genuine main player. He's probably going to fight for a title within the next 2 years. If you asked like 95% of the fan base to name one fun fact about Michael Morales, do you think they could get a single one?
That's a great example because we've two times now, right? Remember, because I did the one feature and then I did a second one. And I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot I wrote about Mike Morales last time through. But it was kind of great because you could continue off of the original one. But neither one of those was really met with too much fanfare, even though he's kind of like this phenom, this young phenom who is mostly undefeated, I guess. Or I guess he's undefeated again. He's got this undefeated record, and he's Ecuadorian. He represents a market that hasn't had a champion. There was a lot going on. He was building this compound for his family. It was like all these really interesting guys. But nobody seemed to latch on to that. And there was a day when everybody would have. Everybody would have latched on to that. Yeah.
Catch on to it. You'd be pursuing it, you know?
Yeah. It just feels like we don't, we just don't probe like we used to. Like we used to really fixate on certain athletes. It's harder and harder to do that, I think.
Yeah. I think it's a generational thing too, like because – if I'm getting into new sports, I still try and look for those features about the guys within the sport. You know, I'll try and find the equivalent of the Mendenhall and Al Shadi feature to get the juices flowing, you know?
There's no equivalent.
Yeah, there is. Just, you got two of a kind. before we get into stories, because I do want to finish today's episode off by looking at what we expect to be the biggest stories of 2026. And Uncrowned is a great article up with our bold predictions, which I'll go through now in a minute. Before then, lads... very sad news. The boys in the back yesterday. Well, to be honest, the boys in the back yesterday started off their segment like, will there be a bromance between John Jones and DC? And then they started going through what had been said lately. And I think it was quickly established that, they went from like, maybe we can be cordial to, you know what? I think boxing is the best way for us to now compete against each other or wrestling, you know?
Oh, man.
But listen, lads, we got an update from John Jones. And unfortunately... he says DC's a dickhead. Can we play the clip, please?
This season is against Daniel Cormier. Oh, man, what a stuffy, just dickhead Cormier really is. I think if you really get to know Daniel Cormier, he's really not.
Yeah, I was not. He was not.
He's an asshole. He was an asshole. I mean, he didn't really connect with any of the fighters here. He's just an asshole. I tried to make peace with him many times, and he made it very clear that he wants to be enemies for the rest of his life because how lucrative it is. And he's just a, I don't know.
Well, if takes one to know one,
that's
was
actually
ever
a John Jones I could get behind. Like when
that's, what,
like that,
that's what I was gonna say.
Yeah,
man.
That's like, that's the good version right there.
This is you know, I love that he tried to start it off like he was gonna give it like a nuanced rundown of Cormier's personality. You know, he's just a stuffy, you know, dickhead.
Oh,
reminds
man
me of myself so yeah much sometimes, John Jones. So good. So lads, I'm sorry, no friendship yeah between DC and John Jones. But John Jones, once again in Thailand, and as we know from his previous—
Is he back out there?
He's back out there. He's having the time of his life. He's smelling guys' hair on the back of mopeds. He's having a great time. Here's the thing. These guys must pay a shit ton of money, because it's not, like, it's just a few months ago where Cormier was like, I wouldn't go to Thailand and be on one of those Russian Ultimate Fighter shows. And that's exactly, that is absolutely exactly what he's done now. They must be paying a lot of money. We remember, we know that the Aspinall fight, in part, John Jones' excuse was like, because I'm out here having the time of my life in Thailand and getting paid.
Living my best life. He was
living his best. Sorry, yeah, that is the quote. This is the end, right? Like, we are, I know, I'm sorry for doing this again, by the way. Everyone's fucking sick of talking about this, but I mean,
you're
it's not going
to
happen.
Wait, are we about to do Jones Aspinall? Is that what we're about to do?
No, no, I'm not even asking about Jones and Aspinall. It's Pereira or Jones or whatever, the White House, all this bullshit. It's not happening, right? It's just not happening, Al-Shadi, is it? Jones in any form this year?
This would have been your segue into the bold predictions, because I think we addressed this very thing, PT.
Well, we just jump in there. We just jump into bold predictions and we can take
it from
there.
I mean,
we
kind of talk about your question right now. Like, this
okay
is...
we'll slowly segue. We're pros. We're pros. We'll get there.
Okay, listen. Well, two of you are pros. me, not so much.
I personally, I love this stuff, man. This is the type of thing I find so amusing. I want these two guys to be in wheelchairs at age 85, still doing this. Like, just pushing each other in the back from one wheelchair to the other. Like, this is the best. I love rivalries in the fight game in particular, but like all sports. But like, you still seeing like Isaiah Thomas shit on Michael Jordan right now. Yeah. Like, that's a story in basketball right now. And it's like, that was in the 80s, guys. Like, all right. Like, I just want this to perpetuate forever. There's no making up. There's no making friends. I see Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping shaking hands. Hey, like, I don't want to see that.
I don't need that.
Yeah, I don't need that.
That's all they had was that hatred between each other. That's all they had, damn it.
That was all that was interesting for you guys, for God's sake.
Ollie and Frazier, they could be civil because they were so tied into history together, but you always got the sense that they just didn't want to be around each other. I mean, that was kind of the thing you're talking about. When you have that kind of thing, it's not something you turn on and off, you know? And I think that why would we want it? I don't need that. Like, part of the lore is that backstage exchange, whatever it was, behind the scenes thing where they were going back and forth, and you saw the true John Jones, you saw like Cormier, and you saw them and their true elements going back and forth. That sort of changed the way people approached how to talk to each other too, and opened up the floodgates for that kind of thing. Now, I don't want to see them bromancing. What are we talking about here, man? I want them to have bad blood forever.
Yeah, you know, I vividly, vividly, vividly remember the day where someone, it was probably an hour before it like went out to the public, where someone sent me the backstage like ESPN video.
I know, I remember this, Sean, very well.
I know exactly, you know the story that it's in my head right now, Chuck, of how this thing got out to the world. Yeah. And like, I remember somebody sent this to me and I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Are we not allowed to tell the story of how this got out to the world? Because I want to hear it.
I'll let Chuck to make that decision. That's not mine to tell.
Well, let's put it this way, guys. Read the fight game coming up here in a little bit. I do mention, like, I just kind of talk about it. I mean, it's not that controversial or anything, but it's a funny story in retrospect. And some people involved in this panel were probably the reason the world got to see that, you know?
You're very welcome. Very welcome, guys. No problem.
I appreciate it, man. Like, seriously, that was nice.
That stuff is so... I love that. That's the best part of the fight game to me. Just these, because like, if you're Daniel Cormier, you understand, right? Like, I remember back in the day when I was at The Athletic, I did like one of my nightly face pieces on DC. And like, it was really cool to be able to talk to like all the wrestling, like his old wrestling opponents and like his old wrestling coaches, and just like, who was Daniel Cormier, the wrestler, before we saw him as this preternatural competitor in MMA. And they were all saying the same thing of like, this guy's a total dick. He would just completely make fun of you while he's just destroying you all day, all season. He would just completely demoralize you to a level where you're like, I don't even understand how I'm in this sport. He's so much better than me. And like, that's who DC is. Yeah. And then DC gets to hear, and there's one guy in the entire world he can't do that to. And then so that guy pops for steroids after knocking him out on like on national TV. Like, if I'm DC, F that guy too. Yeah. Like, I'm living with that forever, man. Like, you're the guy that would like stop me.
And the dude's rubbing it in your face. Even when he's telling you, like, yeah, I'm trying to make the peace, while he rubs it in your face that he beat you, that he made you cry.
He's so like, it's so kind of smarmy with it too, of just like, there's a little bit like, yeah, we all know what happened to him. Yeah. So like, John's with it. I love it, man. I love it. I want that to
Do you know where you mentioned Fraser and Ali? Do you know what Joe Fraser's voicemail was before he died, Chuck?
No.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. I'm the man who did that to Muhammad Ali.
Wow.
Beep. Even at like Beep. Older age?
Hey, yeah. Joe, just Chuck. Give me a call whenever you get in. That is wild, man. So no, I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's a documentary about it, and that's how it ends. They just play the voicemail at the end.
You're going to have to tell me.
I think it was an old Channel 4 one. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. I'll find it for you. But let's get on to these bold predictions. A great piece, all of the brilliant minds of Uncrowned combined to put together our bold predictions for 2026. I love doing this because I'm always wrong.
Well, first of all, wait. There were a few from last year. Sean sent us the link to, hey, let's do one of these for this year. And I just at first kind of glanced at it. I'm like, oh, we weren't too far. And then I started looking more deeply. I'm like, I'm actually reading back through it. And I'm like, we were pretty damn close on several of those, you know?
I think so, everybody hit on one.
Yeah.
At least.
Everybody hit on one for John the most Jones. Part. Yeah.
I think that's what I
you
said.
You said stripped. And
I said they get rid of McGregor, but they
Ben's was really dead on because he was like, he'll retire and then unretire, which is exactly what happened. Yeah. And then I pointed out that with the heavyweight, it ended up being Cyril Gaon that's going to do something that's going to, I said that he would beat Aspinall. Like, that's probably how, and it wasn't quite like that, but it was him who basically delivered the anticlimactic blow, you know? So it's like, it was in the same vein.
Yeah. No, you're right. I'm just generally not, usually, in fact, you know, when I pick prospects of the year, it's usually like the death knell for their career. You know, like this guy, breakout star 2026, dong, fucking loses three times by brutal KO. But here is our bold prediction for 2026. Mendenhall up top here. It will be...
I think this freeze frame. This is good.
Oh my God. Look at who is that handsome bastard?
Yeah. You're trying to chase people away from our column?
This is a terrible idea. Who thought of this? It will be the year of unconventional things in the UFC, Chuck. Tell me.
Yeah. I just get the sense, and I mean, this is a little bit of just pure speculation, that we might see some things that are just very unconventional in terms of, I know that we've seen like James Toney, we've seen CM Punk, but given the fact that you have a Jake Paul pulling just stupid numbers with the Netflix, boxing the generations of heavyweights, and like, This is just kind of the way business is out there, and you have a TKO group that is a larger thing now than just the UFC. I just get the feeling that we're going to see some cameo type things, you know, like we'll see like people who maybe wouldn't have been in the UFC who will end up in the UFC. Now, I hope I'm wrong about this. I just feel like that especially if you create a vortex with the White House where you have like six different title fights, where what are you supposed to do with the months around that? You know what I mean? Like, so I could see them going a little more gimmicky than they ever have. That's all. I just think that we'll probably see some weird stuff like that.
Oh, sounds fun. Yeah. you mentioned the John Jones thing, and I know that's another one of your predictions. John Jones will come back and lose, which means we'll be stuck with him as he won't be able to live with a loss.
It's very specific, but it's not so crazy. First of all, it's a little longer in the tooth, and he's always out of there a little longer than before. And I'm like, I could see a scenario where he returns. He loses, but then he wants to fight again. And I honestly, if he was able to come back, I feel like this is the chances of this happening are not as good as they might have been at one point. But him coming in mid-year and losing would then prompt, I think, a second fight toward the end of the year. So not only would you get him once, but you'd get him twice, because I don't think he'd be able to live with it. I don't think he'd be able to like you know, he's been so protective of his legacy. He's not going to want to have a loss on his record. So if that first part happens, I feel like the second part has a very good chance of happening.
One thing I think is very bold that was predicted in this is Drake Riggs saying UFC gets cool again. My biggest fear is like the UFC is completely ick
right.
because and of the situation. You know, it's like, you know, people like say this, everything like this, political cycles, right? One thing was cool, yeah. then it's not cool. The UFC fans love Donald Trump and all this association and stuff. And I'm like, if he goes, people are going to see the attachment between the UFC and him and be like, oh, remember that? Like that, no. that's my clear and present danger, fear for the sport and the perception of the sport. So I really hope Drake is right.
Me too. Right? That was really the boldest of all predictions, by the way. When he said that, I was like, wow, that is completely counterintuitive to everything I'm thinking right now.
I would love if that happened. I would love to be the optimist that is Drake Riggs. My God. My prediction, my bold one, guys, as you guys know, is that the White House event won't happen. I just think there's so much that can go wrong there.
You're right,
Shane. Like you know, you're smarter than me.
This isn't Croke Park, baby. This isn't Croke Park.
Exactly, and they couldn't fucking do that either. But you know what I mean? Like, there's so much shit going on there. Apparently, you know, busy old place that White House in Washington. If there's a crisis, anything like that, it's gone. Like, I don't know. I just feel like we're talking about it. In a far more like this is going to happen way than we ever do about like fights that were right in front of the UFC, like Jones and Aspinall was there and Gano and Jones was there, and there was never this sense of like, well, that's definitely going to happen. We are 100% like this is going to happen at the White House, and that to me seems crazy, Shane.
Does it though? Like, I don't know. To me, like, I think we're equating two different things with that comparison, right? Because like Jones and Gano, Jones Aspinall, like those were always fights that relied on like individual fighters, mainly John Jones, making decisions that would be counterintuitive to like everything we've known about him and how protective of, you know, he's not a risk taker. It took him like 13 years to go to heavyweight after talking about it initially, right? This is more of like, this feels to me more like Dana talking about the sphere and then slowly materializing the sphere into existence, where like, okay, this is an idea we're going to do. We're definitely going to do it. And it doesn't really rely on anybody else, like any fighter's whims to do it. It's just, we got clearance with the sphere people, so we're going to do it with the sphere people. This feels like the same thing, where like Donald Trump's clearly in on it. It's clearly going to be a week that's just like very much celebrating Donald Trump for better or worse. He's going to, Ben said this week, and I think he's probably right. I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump gets a UFC title belt of some degree. At this thing, right?
I mean, like, I'd be surprised if he didn't, you know? It'd be like...
FIFA gave him a Nobel Peace Prize.
Is it? You know what, though? Like, when you think about this, do you remember the whole, like, Fight Island? We're going to have a Fight Island. There's going to be a, you know, right on the sand, you know, this type of thing. And you're like, what? I can't wait to see this. And obviously, what they ended up coming to was nothing like what he originally projected. Is there a chance that they try to keep it a White House card, but it ends up not being on the lawn? It's just some other place in Washington where, you know, like, you know what I mean? Where they just, they amend it and they do it, but it's not quite what was first envisioned. It just becomes a little bit different, but that's more practical, you know, because if some of the things that you're objecting to are the logistics, the nightmare of logistics that will go into that. And I wonder if that will in the end push it into some bastardization or something of the original plan. You know what I mean? Where all of a sudden you're getting sort of a compromise.
Is it a jump the shark moment, Chuck? Because you always talk about jump the shark moments. Like, could this be it? Like,
I mean, with the fan base, no. Because I don't, like, you know, it's sad that the Happy Days fan base was more sophisticated than that of MMA, you know? That they could understand when the shark was being jumped. Like, hey, man, I'm not following on this one. But this one, I'm like, I think that they'll just keep rolling along, you know. They've had their moments where, you know, things don't come off the way they hope, or they change plans, or they never do it, and the fans who love it, you know, they're just going to keep following it.
See, I think we're too far in the forest to see the trees in this one. I think that, like, this will absolutely happen, and it will happen in a way that, like, Dana White and Donald Trump seem very dead set on, like, making it a big spectacular thing. And I think we in the sport are probably too inwards to like understand how, like, this is going to be the biggest event of the year by far.
Yeah, definitely.
There's not even a close second. And like the whole calendar is going to be engineered.
Well, Denver Nuggets in the finals in June. But anyways, yes, I know. I take
you still don't make this an NBA debate because both your teams are good. All right,
Brooks about that. Right? But no, like the whole year the most part until we get to the summer and this happens is going to be engineered around figuring out how to make this the biggest, most spectacular thing that they've ever seen. And yeah. I think for the mainstream audience who doesn't, you know, watch UFC Vegas 113 or whatever else, like. This is the one thing that's on their radar and that they're going to be tuning into this year. It's like, oh my God, this UFC at the event at the White House. Like, I got to tune into that. Even like for our broader, you know, like we work in partnership with Yahoo Sports. Like a lot of the Yahoo Sports people, when they were talking about like, hey, coming to us and like, hey, MMA preview for 2026. Can you guys talk about the White House? That's like the one thing that's in the ecosphere within the sports.
Yeah, not
landscape.
To mention like some of the. Like whatever it is, like podcasts within the Yahoo Network have asked us to go on and talk about the White House thing specifically.
The White House.
Yeah. You know, specifically, nothing else, just that. So yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm like, and just for the record, like I will be buzzing for this card when it happens. Like I want to see what it looks like. I want to. This is crazy. You know, this is.
It's probably gonna be one of the best cards we've ever seen, just in terms of like talent. Imagine.
And like, just think about when we started covering the sport. Like the idea of this happening is insane. In the fucking White House, they're gonna have a card.
I mean, it's insane.
It's mental. So like I'm not.
I mean, it wasn't even legal
this.
In New York City or New York for the longest time. What was it? Whatever year that was.
2016 was it?
Yeah. Like you're not even a decade back for it to a decade later appear at the White House is one of the greatest juxtapositions in all of sport, if not the greatest. I mean, that is wild to think about.
It's crazy. You have another bold prediction, Chuck. I believe that you brought forward four specifically for the crack, which we very much appreciate.
What was it?
It was Varmo Plus.
What?
Does the product become diluted?
You're saying about this. So in terms of a story to watch, right, in 2026, I do believe that this is one. When Drake says something like, and I, you know, Drake's been right on a bunch of stuff. So and he won our predictions. Like the guy has a pretty good crystal ball.
Oh, don't want
he's
another Drake
good,
Riggs
he's
victory
got a pretty good crystal ball.
Up.
That's all okay. It is.
So, you know what his bold prediction for last year was? Tony Ferguson's going to win something. What happened?
Something. Shit. That's pretty bold.
It was very bold at the time.
I hope he's right, dude. I hope he's right. Fucking hell.
I hope it gets cool. But my bigger concern, okay, so when the UFC, it was a trajectory, it was a growing escalation. And I think that the way it was perceived was just like that. When they went to Fox, it was like this legitimizing moment. It was like, okay, they're going to Fox. They're going to a mainstream legitimate thing, right? Like they're going to broadcast. And they also had, you know, they kind of on the lesser channels, you know, Fox Sports 1 or whatever it was, they could fill those out with UFC events. When they went to ESPN, obviously this is the flagship, right? They're going to the where everybody wants to. You're destined eventually, if you're a real sport, to end up with ESPN. And they could become almost a flagship for ESPN Plus. Bring all this, you know, it was one stop shopping, you're all going to come to ESPN Plus. This is the first time where they're kind of entering more of just a general content. We're going over to Paramount Plus when you've got like Prime, you've got Netflix, you've got all the different streaming services, and you're just saying like, we're content. We're just going over there. We signed a big deal. And it feels a little bit more like Woodwork to me. This is more of a Woodwork moment where you're like, this doesn't have the same magnitude as the others. And it feels a little bit more just kind of pedestrian in how it's going about it, right? Like you're even mentioning like Dana White not even trying to evolve in terms of, or not mustering a new kind of enthusiasm and stuff like that. I just hope that it doesn't become like this diluted, strange thing, especially with the loss of pay-per-views where the numbers now are just big events, but they're not pay-per-views. They're not like the rallying points they once were. I just hope it doesn't become like that, where it's just like it loses the vitality that's held in place, even through the inundation of too many cards and all that stuff. There's always been this vital thing to it that has kept going. And I feel like that is a story we have to watch. Does it lose its steam? You know, like, does it lose some broader spirit of itself as it goes into this new phase?
I believe, Mr. Alshadi, your point goes alongside Chuck's in that regard. It is about the state of the product of the UFC in general.
Yeah, I think Chuck said a lot there that I think I've been thinking about as well, as we sort of turn the page on 2026. Let me ask you, fellas, because I was talking about this with someone else yesterday, and I don't know if I know the answer. What was the biggest fight of 2025?
I picked
I picked it.
Like the biggest. An event when things felt the biggest.
The fight.
Yeah, one event. Fight. I mean, whatever.
It should pop out of your head.
I said
right?
317, Topuria and Oliveira, because it had Roy Val and Van on it as well. It had...
No, I'm talking about before.
Just a specific like, fight?
No, just like an event. An event where it was like, oh, this is the biggest card of the year. I think you're probably right that it was Topuria. Yeah.
That's the one that's Oliveira. That's the but one
I was
that
specifically
comes to
looking for it, right? Like that was but a the task fact I had
that,
to do.
The fact that it doesn't immediately come to mind right. and that we there's not that, like, a real consensus answer. Y'all, 2025 kind of sucked.
Yeah, no,
for MMA.
I agree.
Yeah.
Like 2025 was one of the worst years of MMA that we have had in this space since we've all been in this space, true. At least in my mind.
No, you're
and
right.
I don't think that's I don't feel like that's a jaded perspective. Like, again, it speaks to a lot of what we've just been broadly talking about this entire show of just like the state of promotion, the state of the game. How much does UFC care at this point? I'm worried about that, man. I'm worried about that because it feels as if I don't know like how sustainable that is, right? So like these things always sort of trail a year or two behind where like if the product is really good and then cools down, the enthusiasm for it will take a bit before it cools down to the same level of the product. I feel like we might be about to hit a moment of downturn for the sport product-wise, and then how soon afterwards is the enthusiasm going to downturn as well? Because the UFC's already made its money. They don't have incentive to care, especially with this pay-per-view list sort of space like you just said, Chuck. Like, yeah. How long is it going to matter? Like, if we get to October and it's UFC, you know, 340, is UFC going to be incentivized by that point to make that a good card? Or is it just another UFC Mexico City, whatever, with, right. you know, like a random Brandon Moreno flyweight fight attached to the top of it? Like to what level does the degradation, like to what speed does the degradation, I guess, happen? Because we all kind of know that it's probably going to happen to some degree, or Paramount's going to pivot. And all these people within the space who are sort of the experts of media rights and things like that, who are saying like, you guys crazily overpaid for right. this. Paramount's going to sort of realize that and be like, hey guys, we're going to do this really good special card for $30.
Yeah.
Because the fan base is still conditioned to be okay with that. And in 2 years from now, that probably won't be the case. So it's just, I'm concerned about the state, I guess, of the overall health of the sport.
Yeah.
As we move forward in 2026. Because like, you know, I think that everything I just said holds true about like we just came off a very weak year. The star power in the sport's pretty rough right now. I think we have the most lackluster number two that we've had in the space in a long time. And it's just, I don't know, man. It feels like a lot of red flags that could be, you know, maybe it'll be this is the year we bounce back, but also maybe this is the year where things continue to go towards that, to trend that way. And like, what are we looking at in 2027, 2028 at that point?
It doesn't help when Dana White, who's the face of the UFC, is so distracted, right, with like the other pursuits. Power slap.
It feels
slap.
Like he's bored by it, right?
It's like power slap, and now you got Zuffa boxing, and now you're like, you're like, okay, wait, now we're splintering to boot. You know, like we're not just solely focused on the growth or even the vitality. Now you're splitting ways with what's happening. Like you're splitting attention. That doesn't help at all.
Yeah. And it's also like we do have evidence based on the ESPN deal, what that happened there. You know, the Apex came along. We are getting paid for these events no matter what. You know, the Apex had a great function in terms of post-pandemic. Bringing back sports, of course, Dana White. But then it stayed because it was, from a business point of view, very lucrative situation for them. So I agree with Al Shadi in terms of him saying that. And just for the record, big time Ben Folks predicted that Paramount will dip their toe into the pay-per-view waters, which Shaheen has just suggested might happen after the events continue to get diluted, or if they continue to get diluted. Well, that's everything. Listen,
I will say too, because Ben had a really good point about that, where there's no other sports fan base outside of boxing and maybe like wrestling to some degree, even though WWE doesn't do pay-per-views, AEW still does. But outside of that, like there's no other fan base in the world who's conditioned right now to accept paying for a product on that level of like a monthly single one-off type of thing. And that's like just ingrained within us. And I think it's going to stay with us for a while, but if Paramount, you know, 2 years from now decides like, hey, we're going to start doing a tiny bit of pay-per-view, I think then they get some pushback. Whereas there is a runway here before people forget that that's just how it was. where they could do that. And that's something that before Ben had mentioned it, it never really crossed my mind, but it makes a lot of sense of just like, at some point, man, Paramount's, I gotta think, gonna look at this and just like, hey, we could squeeze more out of this. Just like ESPN. How many years of the ESPN deal was it where, hey, next year, going up $5, fellas.
I know.
Yeah. Enjoy. Hey, next year, going up another $4. Enjoy. Hey, the pay-per-view price, raise another $10. Deal with it. Like every year was squeezing more and more and more out of us because this is a very dedicated fan base. They will follow the UFC to wherever they go. They will pay the money they need to pay. I don't know. This feels...
Yeah.
Like, this feels maybe overly optimistic to feel like, oh, it's just going to be free.
Boy, House event's going to be a pay-per-view, isn't it? Let's be honest. If it happens, that's going to be a fucking pay-per-view. If there's six, seven title fights to where they're talking, you're going to write off the rest of the year so for this stupid event, you're fucking paying for that shit.
They better not do that, by the way. Yeah, listen, I heard John Anik say that. Yeah. And that's just nonsense.
Man, everybody's saying everything about it. It makes absolutely no sense to do that, but everyone seems to be completely in love with that idea.
Even the times they've done three title fights, it's too much. It's like, first of all, one takes away from the other. Like, you can't reach magnitude on them. Imagine six of them. They're all potential five rounds.
The pacing of the show.
Oh, my God.
We've had some three title fight events where, like, it's not a great watch.
Well, that's what I mean. Imagine six title fights going the distance.
That's what I'm saying, man.
This is the worst event of all time.
what's 25 times six? Someone who's better than math than me.
150.
That's a lot of minutes.
That's a lot of minutes. All right. Well, look, we actually love MMA. Just disclosure, crackheads. We do love the sport. We're just concerned. All right. We have worries. It's a time of shifting sands. We don't know what's gonna happen. Okay.
We all need to be some perfect Drake rigs right now. It's gonna be It's gonna be a cool sport again. We're about to see it. Spike TV era. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, we're cool. We're hip. I mean, any super chats there, Jordan?
Listen to that. Yeah.
PT, it's your boy Lanzi. I'll be in Dublin with the fiance Feb 19th to the 23rd. What trouble should we get into? How can I track down Blanchardamus? Oh my God, you might catch a wild Blanchardamus anywhere around Dublin at any given time. Just word to the wise. Blanchardstown, not the kind of place to bring your missus, all right? You're not missing much, man. But if you get into trouble, just name drop me, obviously, and they will stop doing whatever they're doing. Obviously, you know,
bring some spray paint to put PT as a rat on every wall.
Yeah, like if in doubt, or call someone around.
PT was here, and just really frame it.
If in doubt, call the person who's attacking you a rat in Blanchardstown, and they'll be like, what do you mean? And just run then. As they're trying to go, did I rat on this person? Just run then. Get on their toes. Get out of there. You'll be fine. Your boy Lanzi, I'll take this offline. I'll send you some recommendations for Dublin. No problem, my friend. Anything else there, Jordan? That's a no.
Wow. That's one and done.
That is what that means, right, Jordan? Is that music playing? The music's gone from my headphones. Oh, there it is. Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. You know, we're just being real about our concerns here, okay? We managed to go a whole podcast without Chuck and Al-Shadi here breaking into an NBA conversation. They're both wearing their NBA hats here now.
Look at that now. Here we go.
This is the show is ending, boys. I'd love for you to get into this, but you cannot do it on this show. And when the NFL ends, we can have you back on because then I'll have a vested interest. I'll want to know more about your wonderful bouncy sport, and we can talk about it then. 2026 is upon us, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a great year for the crack. It's going to be a great year for Uncrowned. Thank you so much to Chuck Mendenhall. Thank you so much to Shaheen Al-Shadi. Thank you to On Air Jordan. Thank you to Oscar Losef. Thank you all for watching. We love you very much. See you next week. Mwah.